Hi, HR Nation, it's Chris Rainey. Welcome to HR Leaders, the show where we interview today's most successful and innovative HR practitioners 5 days a week. Today, we have a very special guest on the show. We're joined by Beth Comstock, former CMO and vice chair at GE and author of Imagine It Forward, Courage, Creativity, and the Power of Change. Beth, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Chris. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Fantastic. For the two people out there by this point, Beth, that don't know who you are.
More than two.
I'm only joking. Give our listeners a little bit of background about yourself personally and your journey to where we are today.
Yeah, well, as you said, a year ago, I left my job as vice chair of GE Leading Innovation, wrote a book that's out in the world now. And I'm kind of an unlikely person to have had that role in the sense that I started out my career to be a storyteller. I wanted to be a science journalist. And as it turned out, I wasn't very confident or very good. So I quickly got behind the scenes, worked my way in promotion and communications roles in media companies like NBC, CNN, CBS. And my work at NBC got the attention of the leadership at GE, which owned NBC. And I made the transition to go work at GE. First in marketing, and then marketing became my pathway into business innovation. And I've spent nearly 30 years carving out my career that way.
Wow. I love asking that question because it's always interesting. And I would say 99% of people that I speak to never plan their career journey.
Never. I was a major in biology. I thought I was going to go to medical school.
Yeah.
As far away from that as possible.
Yeah. And I was a break dancer, and here I am.
Okay, you get the prize. Yeah, I get the prize.
So in terms of the journey where you are now, why write the book now?
My husband said I always was going to write this book. Somehow he must have known that before I did. But I am a storyteller. Also, I think I felt compelled to chronicle this journey of kind of instigating change, being on the wrong side of change in a company that was old established. And I felt I wanted to chronicle that journey, the struggle, the mess, the joy. And why do people like us sign up for this? And why you need people like us in organizations? And secondly, I just worked with a lot of people, especially mid to early career, who felt they saw a better way, but they needed tools. They needed encouragement and inspiration. So I wanted to kind of package what I had learned, the ups, the downs, and offer it to people early to mid-career to say, like, you can do this. If I could do it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I love about it, because it's from your experience, and in those experience are the best insights.
Interesting. I took a bit of a risk in doing it. I share a very personal story. I mean, there aren't many business books that start off talking about a divorce. Mm. But I felt it was important to share the fears, the struggle, to make it real, because change really starts with us. You can only change your outlook to something. You maybe cannot change much else. And I tried to document my journey to do that, as well as the tools and tricks of doing it in an organization.
I think being vulnerable is so powerful. I've had to learn to do that myself in the last few years, and because a lot of people don't, they're scared of being vulnerable and sharing the failures. But that's where the most learning happens, right?
How did you learn that, Chris?
I think my team told me. I had a manager earlier in my career where he was like, you don't share anything with your team. They're not your friends. They're your employees. I had a very, like, you know, very rigid old school manager. And I realized later on that when I started connecting closer with my peers and sharing my own vulnerabilities, that then they opened up to me and they shared their vulnerabilities and what they were having challenges with. And it really connected. And so much of their growth came from being able to come to me and be comfortable to share that sensitive information and the challenges they were going through with me, and the success that I saw that came from that kind of stuck with me now. So yeah. My team.
Such a good, you're also expressing just some self-awareness, right? You needed sort of growth. I had a similar issue where I had been given, I was up for a big job, and GE did these big, you know, really thoughtful 360 degree views. I mean, literally they went back to people I went to high school with. It was very thorough. But out of it came that kind of feedback. My team was saying, hey, you expect everything to be perfect. You go away, you come up with all the answers, and we feel left out.
Yeah.
You're abrupt. we want to help and you don't ask us for help. And I remember, you know, there were some good things in it. It wasn't like they only said bad things, but I, of course, only went to the bad things. And I remember the HR coach I had at the time, he was an HR person in GE, and he was assigned to kind of do my analysis. He gave me some great advice. He said, look, when he gave me a book, I still have the book somewhere. It was like this. It was like, I don't know, 5 pounds. But he said, look, you got to go in there and you got to tell your team, I heard what you said, I accept it, and I need your help. That was like the most vulnerable thing I had ever done, to say, I need your help. But it transformed me. And I think without that kind of intervention, I would not have been as open as I had to open myself up to get feedback. And now I'm at such a belief that feedback is a critical element for business, but for living, really.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of the CHROs and the CEOs that come on the show. They complain and say that their team doesn't give them the feedback, and that they really need someone in the team that's not afraid of saying it how it is. But that's because they're the ones that are causing that problem themselves.
Exactly. Exactly. One of the things I gravitated toward was just a simple question I had heard someone use. And I love this question. Tell me something I don't want to hear. And nice. To do that with your team, I remember we created this team. We called it the Culture Club. And it wasn't because we liked Boy George. I was probably the only one old enough to know who he was. But it was really this tenet. We said, we're going to change the culture, but we can't change the whole company culture. We can only change ours. And we had this contract, if you will, of tell me something I don't want to hear. You have to tell me, and I'm going to tell you. And at first, the team, like you said, they nominate the nicest guy to step up, and he tells me like something really kind of sweet, right?
It's an indirect compliment.
Yeah, exactly. But you have to go back and go, no, that's not tough enough. No, no. And one of the things they told me after enough prodding was, you're very demanding. And that wasn't a surprise, but you talk about failure, but you're not encouraging us to fail. So we came out of this, that we created this whole process. We called it a failure convention, and I had to share failure. They did, but had I not asked, like kept asking, I never would have learned how I might be holding them back.
Yeah. And my one, just to share with you, is that I'll end up just doing things out of frustration myself rather than waiting for the individuals to do it.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a common one.
I can do it myself quicker than they can do it. So let me just get it done. And then they're like, yeah, I know, but I can't. I know. But in your head, you know, and they get really frustrated at me. It was that you told me I was going to do that. And then that's my one. I end up just doing everything. So,
yeah. And then you kill yourself doing it, and you're bitter and you resent people, right? And they resent you. So you end up in a really bad spot.
Yeah. And they don't have the opportunity to learn and fail themselves. I'm not giving them the opportunity. I think that's what I've taken away from it mostly is that I'm not giving them the opportunity to learn how to do it, or to fail and learn from that failure and grow. And also the satisfaction that comes with completing a task or a goal, I'm taking that away from that person.
Yeah, it's a good way to put it. That's why I firmly believe this notion of management that many of us have been taught in business is kind of dead. This sense that you control things, you tell people what to do, and then they go do it. It's what, to me, it's the model you said. It's more of a figure it out model. As a team leader,
you have to.
You have a vision. You say, here's a goal, but let people, give them the space and room to figure it out. You need to say, come to me when you need help. You can't give people the answer. You can give them the question, right? Yeah. And I think we in business don't, we got to shed this command and control past, because it's not serving us in the problems we have in the world today.
No, I think the easiest thing I learned in my career early on as a manager, I had no management training. I was like, teenager, literally thrown into a manager position. A year and a half before I started that job, I was already managing 4 people as like a 19-year-old. I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And what I learned is very early on is whenever someone came to me with a question, I'd be like, what would you do? How would you solve that? And it was almost, as soon as I discovered that question, I was like, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah, I love that also. What are your favorite questions? I think that's a good one for critics too, right? The ones who are like, no, you can't do that. No. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, now you own the problem.
And they know the answer 90% of the time.
Yeah.
And you talk about permission, right? They just want your permission. They want you to say it out loud. So they go, oh, so it is the right thing to do, Chris. And then they go off and do it.
Exactly.
So I'm trying to get them into the mindset of go and do it. And then if you have any problems, then come back to me. It's just the other way around. And it takes a long time, even for the employees. It's a culture. It's a culture that you've created. Now I say, go away. I'm like, please, I'm encouraging you. If you're not failing every day, then we're not moving forward.
People are afraid. And the permission thing you mentioned, I'm such a, to me, it's the underpinning of what my thesis of the book is. You can't imagine better unless you give yourself permission to take action. And I saw in the course of my work that too many people had alibis for why they couldn't do something, right?
Yeah.
Their boss wouldn't let them. They didn't have a budget. They didn't know how. The board wouldn't let them, whatever. And that really, if you peeled that back, they were afraid.
Always afraid. Always comes down to
that. Right. And they didn't work for somebody who acknowledged those fears, said, I've got your back. Now you got to do it. And you got to give yourself permission. I will back whatever happens. So it's that conversation that needs to happen. I actually used to write out permission slips that I'd for myself, and I'd give blank ones to colleagues saying, here, I can give you permission, but somehow I believe that's not enough. You've got to do it.
Yeah, I had that conversation myself. I'm not even exaggerating, for about 4 years about whether to start a company. And I always found excuses. Oh, it's not the right time. I'm going to get married soon. So I go, I don't know how to do the finances. So that means I can't be a co-founder because I don't know how to do operate accounting. Yeah. Well, I came up with so many, and it was like, what are my friends going to think if I fail? What is my wife going to think? What's her parents going to think that I'm going to leave my job? You know, there was a million things. And I listened to a podcast called Entrepreneurs on Fire. And one of the questions he always asked was, what was stopping you? And it's always fear, and it's everything you've said. And I listened to probably hundreds of episodes, and every single CEO, co-founder, these are the biggest companies in the world, say fear of failure. And so when I saw you in your book about permission, it just immediately resonated with me.
And that fear, we don't talk enough about it.
No.
So I'm glad you heard that on the podcast. I think you're talking to HR leaders here, and you know they play an important role in making it okay and coaching team leaders to be vulnerable, to say, I don't know the answer,
mm-hmm.
right? What a scary thing to say, I'm leading this project, but I don't know the answer.
Mm.
I'm here because I have a set of capabilities. I'm here because we're all going to figure it out together. But to just start that saying, I don't know the answer, or let's admit we're all afraid, we don't know the answer, and we're afraid of the consequences, so we pretend like we are, and we beat each other up. So I do think HR increasingly has a role to help nurture and almost midwife that process to encourage teams to be more open about that.
How do we overcome that then? What do we do? Where do we start?
Well, I think it's just individual acts of vulnerability. And it takes, to what you said earlier, it takes a very self-aware leader. So how do you become more self-aware? I think you get feedback. And I'm big, as we said earlier, on feedback, everyday feedback. Tell me something I don't want to hear. How did we do? But you have to weigh that feedback against what's your strategy, what do you value, what are your strengths, because not all feedback is equal or helpful.
Sure.
But but I do think if you start to see patterns, if everybody says you're too abrupt, okay, can they all be wrong?
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm excited for everyone listening to go and ask that question now. I'm going to do it when my team comes back in after this call, after this podcast.
I'd be curious to hear what they tell you.
I'll let you know. I'll post it on LinkedIn, actually. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to post it on LinkedIn and let everyone know. You mentioned in the book, you share so many stories, right? And I'm interested to know which of the stories had the biggest impact on you personally, and then which had the biggest impact on you from a career point of view?
Well, I think the one I start the book with, talking about a divorce, which is not your typical business book, that had the biggest, profoundest impact on me personally and professionally, because my career was just starting. I was married and had a young baby, and I realized the story that I had signed up for was not the story I wanted. And it wasn't my story. It was everybody saying, oh, look, you have this great path ahead of you. But I was more ambitious in a different way. I wanted to have a career. I wanted to set forth in a new way. And so I got a divorce and sort of willingly chose to move forward. And I shared that story because it was very risky. I didn't stop and overanalyze it. Sure, I was afraid. I had to face the fear, but I had to make it work. And so that was my change lesson. Once you've made a path, picked a path, you have to make it work for you. And I didn't say you have to make it succeed. You mm-hmm. have to make it work, right? Mm-hmm. Through the failure, through the ups and downs. And so I felt that was a big lesson. And in times of change and difficult times, I'll go back to that moment and go, see, you did it. You thought you couldn't do it, but you can do that. You can.
This episode of the HR Leaders Podcast was brought to you by our friends at Achievers. Two-thirds of employees have one foot out the door in 2024, and the top reason to job hunt? Better compensation. But money isn't everything. The Achievers 2024 Engagement and Retention Report reveals that employees crave emotional salary too. What does emotional salary mean? And what are the ways to increase emotional salary to engage and retain top talent? Learn more about motivating your employees beyond just pay by visiting achievers.com/HR leaders. Again, that's achievers.com/HR leaders. Let's get back to the episode.
Can be something that's truer to what you wanted. And then professionally, I mean, again, that's helped me professionally, but there was a time I document in the book when I was in the middle of, I was overseeing digital media at NBC, which is a broadcasting network. And it was a huge disruptive time. YouTube had just emerged. All the broadcasters were panicked about digital. And I represented kind of this new change, the digital change. And boy, we made a lot of mistakes. We bought a company that ultimately didn't succeed. We did seed one thing that did in Hulu. But what I really struggled with was I lost perspective. I duked it out with folks. We became at war. It was like our team versus your team. And my boss later told me if I hadn't fixed my ways, I might have gotten fired. And so he didn't give me that feedback until much later. I could have used it a lot earlier.
It's funny how they wait until those meetings to tell you.
I know.
So you wait until this situation to tell me.
Tell me. I know. But I felt it. I knew it. And I did make change after that. But that was that sense of coming so close that you know it, right? You know it. And I might have sped a lot of behavior change if I had known it sooner.
Mm. So looking back, what would you have done differently?
Well, I think in that situation, I would, and I talk about it in the book, I think I would have tried to gain more perspective. I would have just stepped back and, again, asked different questions, remind ourselves, what problem are we trying to solve? We're trying to create the future of NBC. Who's the enemy here? It's not each other. How do we get everybody together and go out and discover trends and see what the competitors are doing together, not fight over whose idea is better? I would have shared budgets. I would have created more integrated teams in some of these experiments that we did, not kind of the cool kids versus the not cool kids. Mm-hmm. All of those things, I put myself out there, promoted myself really to promote the message, but I think it was confused. I would have spent more time internally. Mm-hmm. So all those things are now I can learn that I could have done those better. But you have to sometimes go through those to learn that.
You have to go through those experiences. And that's why I love the fact that you shared it in the book, because people now can benefit from your experience of you going through it. And there's not many books out that do really share it to that level of detail to help people.
And right. I think it's a good point you're making. It's not like take this and now you don't have to go through it. It's just know when you're in this moment, it feels horrible. You feel you're failing. You may be failing. Mm-hmm. And know that there's another side. You've got to kind of own the good and the bad.
And also that it's common.
Yeah.
I think a lot of you, like I am now almost, I won't say immune to uncomfortable situations, but now I'm comfortable in chaos. And I'm kind of used to it. And I think a lot of the things that I did before I got into business in the sports world, we lost more than we won in many sports. There was failures all the time in training every single day, whereas ice hockey or all of the other sports that we played. So when I came into the business world, I felt like I already experienced a lot of failure, but it was normal. So failure going and coming back crying. I remember me and my business partner now in the back of his dad's car crying on the way home because he lost an ice hockey game, right? And then when I first had my first day in the office at 17 years old and people were crying about a customer saying no to them on the phone, I was like, really? Like, you're getting upset about that? And people were like, you're weird. You're strange, Chris. You're a strange person. Like, no, rejection's normal. Yeah. Failure is just part of the process. For everyone listening, we've failed so many times as a startup, even though it's been a year and a half, but that's exciting. It means we're going in a direction.
Yeah. And I love failure's not an option, then neither is success. But I worry about it in business because short-term pressures, investor pressures, they can become your alibi if you're not careful. This past year, as I said, I left GE a year ago. There was a leadership change and all kinds of challenges that the GEs faced this year. And everybody's wanted to play the blame game. Look, there were a lot of mistakes, but a lot of good things work too. But But in business, we expect perfection. We expect, you know, quarter over quarter precision, and everything works exactly the same way, but that's just not the way the world works. And I think that exacerbates, and what every HR leader has to face into is we have to make room for those areas of experimentation. We have to understand the failure, and ideally you want the failure to happen at a smaller level to make the learning better, to spend less money, and to take those people who are good, as you said, at the uncomfortableness, at the ambiguity, and use them to seed some of these areas that maybe are a bit risky because they have more of a tolerance for that.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why I love the discovery part of the book.
Well, good. I love that. To me, I mean, discovery is the joy of living. It's the joy. It's a joy we need to bring more into work. And to me, it's just this notion of pick your head up, get out of the day-to-day focus, and see what's happening in the world. Go see for yourself. You make connections. Connections make way for patterns. And you're able to start seeing things. You're not predicting the future, but you're just getting comfortable with things that challenge your point of view, especially things that are weird. And that's, I mean, I often challenge people at this, when you're thinking about this, to think back a decade ago. What were things that were just emerging a decade ago that now are mainstream? Every industry has that. I was with a group of people in the beer industry recently, and they were bemoaning the fact that craft brewing has basically taken over the industry, as if those brewers, those little craft brewers, just emerged on a hop plant overnight.
Out of nowhere, yeah.
And overtook them. Meanwhile, if you go to any community around the world, you could start to see these craft beers starting to emerge. So those patterns are out there. You just need to go see them and understand what it means for your business.
Yeah. And it's now you have to.
You have to.
Otherwise you will be disrupted and you will not have a business.
People say, I don't have time. And I say, well, I guarantee you have 10% of your time. Yeah. Focus on things you already know, in meetings you already know the outcome. Give yourself that time and get out there. Go walk around with a customer. Go take your team. So you do have time.
Yeah, so I was just going to ask you briefly some examples. So what are some other examples of things that you did then to get that perspective?
Yeah, so I remember when we were looking at trying to get rid of our command and control culture and be much more distributed, and we were trying to get rid of hierarchy and bureaucracy. And so I sent a top-tier executive team to Israel to live in military barracks for a couple of weeks to understand non-hierarchical learning from the Israeli military. Like, we could have studied it, but they had to go live it. When I was leading digital at NBC, I took a team and we went and we judged boy band competitions in South Korea. Wow. Because that was the epicenter of where consumer trends at the time were happening.
I see, yeah.
Now, again, your budget may not be that you can take a team of three people to South Korea, but you can certainly get out and go to a local college. You can go to a startup. There are maker spaces, for example, in every community where people are just kind of hacking around making stuff. Go ask them what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Every community has an opportunity to learn something new. And maybe what I would do would be field trip Fridays. One Friday a month, we'd take our team. Together, we'd go and explore a new store, a new brand, just to say, what are we learning from this?
Yeah, I have a similar experience, but not to the extent that you're talking about. But I used to do activities that are completely non-related to work with the team.
I love that.
And some of the best ideas. So even if it was, if I saw that we were getting stagnant, I'd be like, let's just go for a walk in the park. And there was a park where we were. We just walk, just spend like 2 hours, just leave the office and just go for a walk and have a chat. And some of the best feedback and the best ideas of why we're just walking or even go for a workout. We used to have like a team workout where we'd go to the park and do a workout session together. And some of the best ideas and innovations and discussions happened during those kind of interactions with the team. It didn't cost anything for us to do that as well. But
Are really good examples.
But I was seen as a very strange person.
why do you think that is?
It was a very, I would say, boiler room types company in terms of, you know, my sales director or the group sales director was like, what the hell are you doing during the middle of the day taking your team out for a walk to have a call? I'm like, well, they needed to reset. Like, I could see it in the team that were getting burnt out. And they're like, well, based on what? I'm like, I don't know. It just felt like there was no reason behind it, if I'm being honest with you. I just thought, let's just do that. We can reset, come back.
I think that's a good gut instinct. I talk in the book about getting outside the jar, and it's this notion of imagine you and your team inside the pickle jar.
Yeah.
And you cannot read what's on the outside of the label inside. So mm-hmm. you just have to get out and have a different perspective. So by rebooting in nature, I often say to people, just take a commute a different way to work for a couple of days. I guarantee when you go back to your old way, you will have noticed new things that you took for granted in the same path every day. So it sounds like you do that with your teams instinctively.
Yeah, we still do it now. I think it's important to change even the settings of our meetings. So it sounds like a small one, but I'll try and have our meetings in different places so it doesn't get familiar. Because when we used to have it in the same room in the office every morning, it kind of felt a bit stagnant. So let's do it in the cafeteria today, or let's do it in the park today, or let's do it. We have our meetings and it doesn't cost me anything. It just costs
Really smart.
A 5-minute walk.
Exactly. A crazy thing I've employed, and this is so silly, but at a meeting, just change everybody's seat.
Or that, right? Yeah, because everyone always sits in the right same spot. You're right.
Exactly.
That's so true.
And I've had that happen. People get really upset, but you're really? Like, just think of the eye. And it's just symbolic, right? Mm. It's very symbolic.
Interesting.
And I don't know if it really shifts your mind. It just at least makes people momentarily uncomfortable.
Yeah. Well, we just moved our office around a few days ago, and it's actually created different energy. Because if you sit, you know, we've put our head of production next to our one of our sales guys, and now all of a sudden the sales guy is cross-pollinating with the head of production, talking
That's
about
smart.
This is what I'm hearing from the customers, and now they're bringing that into our product. That wasn't, by the way, that wasn't planned. But just by moving the seats around and putting different people that wouldn't normally be together next to each other, we're getting these really cool ideas. And some of the challenges that we've been having have been solved just by doing that, for example.
Yeah, it's like you're making room for the discovery of serendipity, right? The serendipitous patterns that and all kinds of new things emerge.
It's interesting. So I always hear from everyone that writes a book, there's always something that they discover when they're writing a book. There's always something that stands out that they wasn't expecting, or there's something they learn personally. So I'm wondering, were there any surprises when you was writing a book that you discovered, where it's personally, or that you look back on your career and had a different perspective on?
Yeah, I'd say two things to that. One is just, I was worried it would be boring. It may be, but this idea of just the struggle to be part of change that's happening in a company, the energy that's required, and kind of asking myself, why did I keep doing it? Because I always believed in a better way. There was this optimism. And just when you're about to give up on something, teams come together, change happens. But the struggle, I realized I ended up liking it more than I thought. The second thing is this challenge I gave myself to kind of open up to be less shy, less reserved, to be more open to forming relationships and connections. And I feel like I was able to document that for myself. And recently I caught up with one of the people I wrote about in the book, and he said, you know, I really appreciate how candid and open you were. He said, however, there's a part of me that wished I had known that, Beth, when we worked together. Because when we worked together, you were still somewhat closed. And mm-hmm. so I like, wow, if I had been able to be more of that earlier, what are the things I might have, the richer experiences I might have had? So that was kind of a bittersweet recognition.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because I had, and this is kind of relatable, when I first started this podcast, I was always very nervous speaking to people like yourself, because you have this big picture that you've painted, whether it's what you've read online or in the media, of I kind of feel like I know who Beth is through the social media, through what you've read, etc., articles, books. And then when you meet the people or have a conversation on the podcast, it's completely different. You know, some of the people that I've heard good stories and bad stories about, I've had a conversation with those individuals, and they're nothing like what I've heard or the stories. But you don't know that unless that person's willing to be open, like you said, and be vulnerable and to share that. And we all just assume that people know that's how you are. And that's a very important one. Thank you for sharing that.
It's a really good one, and emotional for me, right? I mean, you know, to just say, hey, you gave yourself, but you could have done more of that earlier. Like, you know, and I think it takes time to make change. That's the other thing. I mean, we're in this world of rapid disruptive change. And on some levels, we have to act faster than others. But on the other, we have to realize there are multiple speeds. People have to make change work for them in their own way. You can't force it. And so this was my journey. And I had to appreciate that one step led to the other. And it was indeed a journey.
Mm-hmm. So for the HR leaders listening, from your perspective, what can HR do better to manage change, especially with, you know, so much technology, data, the future of work, so obviously it's a big buzzwords talking point at the moment. And as a HR leader, their entire day and their career is this ongoing change.
Yeah,
that is all. What advice would you give to them?
I think one, own it, but you can't own it exclusively. And I see this in companies I get called to talk to, a struggle. Who owns transformation? Who owns culture change? Everybody. HR can help shepherd it, but if HR does their job well, they convene. They convene all the different players. It's marketing, it's IT, you need the tools, you need the behavior shift. And really, to me, change is the best thing any leader can do is to create a surround sound of change in your organization. You can't just tell people you have to change and realign a couple of metrics, because people need coaching. They need exposure to new ideas. You have to bring in sparks from the outside to inspire, provoke. You have to give people room to experiment, try things. I remember when we were seeding 3D printing in GE, it was very scary, but it was also silly. People thought it was stuff made of plastic, not something you'd ever make a jet engine part with.
Yeah.
But we seeded some of the 3D printers around to our aviation engineers, and they found that the most adventurous of them found their way there. They started prototyping in plastic. It became a way to do more in metal. They took it to customers. The other group of engineers who were nervous, they saw that, they got more confidence. And yeah, there were some that never wanted to change, and we have to address those that maybe get left behind, or maybe they get redeployed in other places. But in that situation, it was fun in a sense that you kind of just let people find their own way. We made games around it. We kind of had fun with it. And so I think HR needs to think of their job as creating the surround sound, the environment, and the encouragement and motivation, and yes, metrics. Mm-hmm. They all go together.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a role that's massively been disrupted itself.
Yeah.
If you look at the role of a HR leader over the last 5 years, it's completely transformed what it means to be a HR leader in a business.
It really has. And I worry that companies are trying to hire these chief transformation officers and think like, okay, my job is done.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just delegate transformation to that person. Maybe it's HR, maybe it's IT, maybe it's marketing, but I worry that they delegate it without needing the whole company to embrace it. And you start to get that cool kids, not cool kids. So I often find, I mean, those roles do serve some purpose, but it's far better to bring all the various people who have to make change together and figure that out, create a kind of disciplined approach. And I think HR is in a really good position to be that convener.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And they're perfectly positioned to be able to bring all those moving parts together and communicate that throughout the organization.
Exactly.
So it's a very powerful position to be in. But there, I can definitely see the different, I already know off the top of my head organizations that have your approach where it's everyone needs to be pushing in the same direction. Whereas there's others that I've spoken to that have one person trying to lead the change on their own, and they're just kind of running into brick walls one after another.
Yeah.
And they're like wondering why it's not happening.
No, exactly. And it's the worst is when you say, oh, I'm doing this because the CEO said so. Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, yeah, but that
really lost.
Is an invitation for people to go, well, that's a reason why I'm not going to do it. Right. I mean, or you just have to hear it enough and enough to make it their own. So yeah. I worry about that for those reasons.
Mm-hmm. Before we jump into the quick fire round, I'm just wondering, what's the feedback been so far for the book? Because obviously it's been out for how long now?
It's been out for about 6 weeks. So
yeah, so just interesting.
It's been good. I mean, I think people have been, I think many people may have expected a traditional business book where it's just a framework.
Mm-hmm.
But my thesis is change doesn't happen that way. It's about behavior change and personal story. And so I think people have responded well to the personal story. They might have expected one thing, but responded well to the vulnerability of it. And there's a whole series of practical tools. I think people have found different ways to work with the book. But what I love is also like the permission granting. I'm starting to hear from people. I gave myself permission and I did this. I
love that.
So I love that people are taking action out of it. That was the hope of it.
Yeah, I think that's the most powerful thing that can come out of it, that people take that first step.
Exactly, it's just one step.
Build momentum. And I couldn't believe when I finally was like, I'm doing it, I'm starting the company. When I started it, all of a sudden I was like, wow, it was like a massive weight lifted off my shoulders. And I realized straight away that it's not as hard as I made it. You always build it up in your head.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be so much harder than it was. And I was like, I've given myself permission in so many things in life to go out and do it. But that there was just that one thing that I wasn't doing it. And it was, I wouldn't be where I am now a year and a half later if I didn't do that. But I certainly, we can all understand how hard it is.
It is hard.
And no one's saying it's easy. It's very hard.
If it were easy, we'd all be doing it.
Exactly. But it's that first step that then builds momentum. So guys, just start now. Don't think about it. Just start.
I know. And it's often that it's that everyday courage we're talking about, right? I mean, but it's also relevant only to you. Other people may think like, what, you're afraid to do that. But you're afraid to say an idea, you know, but maybe you are. And it's it's your fear. It's your risk that you're going to take. That's the permission you're giving yourself.
Well, look, that leads us quite nicely onto the quick fire round before we wrap up. I'm going to ask you 5 questions and you have no longer than 30 seconds to give us some amazing answers. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
What was the number one thing that was holding you back from becoming a senior leader in your career?
The confidence.
Yeah, good, perfect on that. What's the best piece of business advice you've ever received?
To what we said earlier, to open myself up, to take feedback, to ask for help.
Okay, fantastic. One book you'd recommend to our audience and why?
Well, my book, but I know I can't.
Of course, your one's going to be in there, don't worry.
But one of my favorite books in business is The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp, and she's a choreographer. And she wrote this book about how everyone can be creative and there's a practice of creativity. And I find in the work today, we got to navigate change to solve problems differently. Creativity is not being a choreographer. It's not wearing a beret and carrying around a palette of paint. It's about creative problem solving. And she gives you some encouragement and simple tools to realize you can be creative whatever your job.
Could you share one internet resource that you use to keep up to date with current events, an online resource that you use the most?
Yeah, I use so many sources. I love social media as a way. I'm going to give you one that's kind of unexpected.
Okay.
So I have a whole method of reading high-low. So I read, I'll read the FT, the Wall Street Journal, but I also regularly read the Daily Mail because I think that it's
important. Wasn't expecting that.
I think it's important to do this high-low kind of exploration and to, one, just hear from different voices, but there are some really interesting science and people discoveries that I found first on the Daily Mail. Again, not expected.
Really? For everyone listening, that's a newspaper here.
Yeah, but it's great. Got a great online resource. And I found it. It's part of my daily arsenal. I'll also read very highbrow news, Aon or Nautilus, these kinds of things that are all about the School of Life is another one I like out of the UK. But I think you have to ground it sometimes and have multiple different sources that challenge you.
Mm-hmm. Do you use any productivity tools to stay organized? Because with your schedule, I'm sure.
I have a lot, basic calendar. I use Quip as something that I organize with the team that I work with to keep my content organized. When I worked in an office, Slack was very helpful. We really gravitated to that for the ongoing thread of communication.
Yeah, the good word there, ongoing. It's not an email back and forth. It's just constant communication.
Constant. Yeah, it's interesting. Some people I'm hearing now say they think it thwarts business productivity. But again, I think business is not just about productivity. There's a time for connecting, communicating, and a time for productivity.
Yeah, it's funny because when I speak to HR leaders, every single one of them use WhatsApp with their teams now.
Oh, that's interesting.
WhatsApp. WhatsApp, Chris? That's the easiest way for me to communicate with my team because my emails are just chaos because I've got so many emails. It's not going to work with my email because I'll miss it. And the speed that I need needs to be something like a Slack or a WhatsApp as well. But I see what you mean because there are things, for example, in our WhatsApp, that we use WhatsApp as well with our team, but I miss things because there may be, 10 lines back. So that's the only problem with that. You're not going to, you may miss things.
But that's what I liked about Slack. You have the whole history.
Exactly.
And I also love the pop-up communities. Like with one of the teams I worked with, someone started they were in California, but they started a California Roses feed. And then it got competitive. And then the people around the world were like, yeah, but you're not the only ones that have good roses. And they start, so again, it brought out the gardeners. And so how else would you be able to share that at work?
It's true. It wouldn't work. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. What's one thing around your journey now that you're most excited about? Because we spoke earlier about the transition from the corporate world to basically startup almost,
Yeah.
How has that been? And what's one thing that you're most excited about right now?
Well, this book has been my bridge to what's next. In some mm-hmm. ways, it's been a convenient excuse to not have to decide what I'm going to do next because I'm working this year as an author. But I'm excited for what's next, and I am going to reenter business in a very different way. I'm not going to go the same path I was on, and I really like sort of setting forth with a beginner's mindset. Granted, a more mature beginner. But mm-hmm. the fact that I can now go reboot myself in a new way in business makes me very excited.
Yeah, that's so, I love that you've mentioned that. It's a hint for everyone, but it's very exciting to go back in and do something completely different as well and challenge yourself.
And do it
yourself.
As a beginner and not, yeah. I don't have to go into something as the CEO of a company. Uh-huh. I want to come in and try to help problem solve in a different way. So I'm going to go out and experiment with that for a while.
Well, look, Beth, thank you so much for taking the time out to join us. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And I know our listeners will be a lot better off for it. And I'm sure many of them are excited to get their hands on the book.
Well, thanks, Chris. Great talking to you. We made it really easy. Thank you. It was fantastic. Really fun, too.
Well, before we go, Beth, give our listeners, there's one parting piece of guidance you can give to our listeners. What would that be? And also, what's the best way to them to get in touch with you and grab a copy of the book?
Yeah, well, you can buy the book on Amazon or anywhere books are sold. The best way to get in touch with me, I'm on all over social, especially LinkedIn is a good way to have more engaging discussion. And I think the best advice is just really, we're in a crazy time of change emerging everywhere, but change starts with you. And really, you can't change a corporate culture until you start with your team culture. So start there.
Fantastic. Well, look, guys, head over to hrdleaders.com. There you'll find all of the show notes from an episode. Everything we're talking about with Beth will be linked there for you. Beth, thank you again for sharing your journey with our listeners, both in the book and on the podcast. And I wish you all the best until we next speak.
Thanks for having me. Really, it's been a great conversation. Thanks, Chris.